Direct from Fort Meade, Maryland, this is DinFos Live.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of DinFos Live. I'm Major David J. Murphy, a DinFos instructor and your host for this month's program. Today, we're discussing narratives, themes, messages, and talking points. Concepts many in our career field are probably familiar with, but we'll also be going a little deeper and exploring a concept called narratology. To help us discuss these important topics, I'd like to welcome two DinFos instructors to the program. Our first guest is from the Public Affairs and Communication Strategy Qualification Course, Lieutenant Commander Mark Lankford. Welcome.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Have a seat. Our second guest is an Advanced Studies instructor who teaches the Joint Intermediate and Joint Contingency Public Affairs courses, Mr. Steve Von Jett. Welcome to the program.
Thanks.
Please have a seat. Thank you for joining us both, gentlemen. I truly appreciate it.
Of course, happy to be here.
Before we get started and talking about these very important concepts and topics, I want to, of course, remind everyone that DinFos Live is live for a reason. If you have any questions for our guests, please don't hesitate to write them down below in the comments, and we might just read them on the air. All right, gentlemen, we first start to like our audience to get to know you a little bit, so can you please tell us a little bit about yourselves and your military career and your time in public affairs?
Sure, I'll start. I grew up in South Carolina, enlisted in the Navy in 2012 as a mass communication specialist, and my first experience in public affairs was being stationed at Navy's headquarters for recruiting, and I worked in their public affairs office. From there, I commissioned and served as a surface warfare officer for the Navy for two tours. Did that, and then was fortunate enough to come back into the public affairs community as a public affairs officer, and I've served two tours out in Japan. One on USS Ronald Reagan, serving as the public affairs officer for the destroyer squadron. And then I went on to US 7th Fleet and served as the deputy public affairs officer before coming here to DinFos to be an instructor.
Okay, great.
Hey, I was born and raised in Joplin, Missouri, and then I spent 21 years in the Army, recently retired. I spent time as a second guy, signals intelligence, enlisted, and then an infantry officer. Finished up public affairs for a number of years. Spent time working Joint Task Force National Capital Region. Worked in National Security Special Events. Was honored and lucky enough to work the previous presidential inauguration, state funerals, Army 10-miler, various events, and finished up my career here teaching in the advanced courses as well as over in the PACS Directorate, and I've just had an amazing time doing it and really happy to be here today.
All right, well, we're happy to have you here. Now, I know that many in our career, as I mentioned, are familiar with, you know, the concepts of narratives, themes, messages, and talking points, but for those who are unfamiliar who might be watching, can you explain what they are?
Yeah, I'll unpack that. I'd like to start kind of with the messages and talking points, kind of the building blocks of how we communicate. And as communication professionals, those are how we communicate with our audiences, with our publics, and ultimately that's how we change knowledge, attitudes, and behaviors. So our messages are our thoughts or opinions of your command. That's like kind of like the heartfelt message that comes from your unit or sometimes from your commander. Those, we want those to be short, memorable. We say here like 12 words or less is the standard.
Yeah.
And then those are supported by talking points, which are facts, data, like attributable things that can support that message or that feeling. Now, where themes come into play is, you know, you've got a whole list of messages and talking points that you've developed. Themes are a way to organize those into topics. So themes are generally one to two words. And it's a concise idea that you can kind of bucket all of different messages under. Right. One example might be, warfighting readiness, maybe okay. It's lethality, and you can take all of those messages for your command and list them under that theme. Now, where narratives come into play, and we're going to talk more, and Steve's going to deep dive into that a little later, but narratives are a collection of stories that we can use to shape and help create an environment where our messages and talking points can be more effective.
Right.
And at the end of the day, that's what we're trying to do, is be more effective at getting our messages out to our desired publics to support our commander's desired end state.
Okay, great.
Well said.
Well, tell us a little bit about how these tools are actually utilized by strategic communicators.
Sure. We use, or should be using, messages and talking points in just about everything that we do. Again, I said the kind of the building blocks of how we communicate publicly, even within our command internally for internal messaging. So any opportunity that you have to communicate as a professional communicator or advising your commander for communication, we should be seeking to inject or use these messages and talking points. So first step is developing them.
Right.
And then any opportunity that you have, I like to use the example in the classroom and saying if as a PAO or a comstrat officer, you're asked a question, maybe the media calls and has a question for you, you can simply answer the question. That gets them what they need.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to get our commanders what they need, which is where creating what we call an effective response, which is a message plus a talking point.
Right.
That gets us what we need to communicate our commander's mission.
Absolutely. If I'm struggling to develop these effective responses, or again, the narratives, or the themes, messages, and talking points that are contingent upon them, are there some good resources that I can latch onto that can help me with that?
Yes. In many cases, messages and talking points sometimes are provided to us, right? That's chain of command. Sometimes they're approved, they get sent down to you, and that's great. I like to, challenge myself and challenge others to make sure when you get those, don't stop there. You can create your own messages and talking points. I seek to look like senior members within our organization, within the DOD, or for myself within the Navy. Staying on top of what's being said by senior members of our organization. So you can search for transcripts from speeches. Sometimes they attend different events, symposiums, where our senior leaders throughout the Navy or Army, Air Force, Marines are speaking about the status of their organizations. That's a treasure trove of great messages you can pull from there.
Mm-hmm.
And then tailor those to your specific need to be effective.
The other thing that you can do is contact the offices around your post, installation, concern, wherever you may be. Get a hold of your IG office. Don't always just wait until something goes wrong to call those folks. Get a hold of them early and often, because IG is there to get you the right answer, both regulatory, by doctrine, everything. Make sure that it's sourced and factual and correct.
Right.
And they're a fantastic resource to say, hey, I need to know a little bit more about this, and I need to make sure that I know the right answer to this. And they will provide you that stuff. But same thing for any of the other offices, whether it's a safety or range control or anything like that. Just call them up and be like, tell me a little bit more about this. And, 10 times out of 10, they want to help.
That's great. Yeah, good advice. When working with these products, talk to me about some of the best products, or I'm sorry, the best practices that can come into play when you're really trying to align your team under these different products.
That's a great question. This really gets to the heart of, we teach the RPI process here, research, mm-hmm. planning, implementation, and evaluation. And for me, this really kind of speaks to the implementation piece, right? You could have the best plan in the world, but if it doesn't translate to your team to execute the messages and talking points, they're not going to be effective. So working with your team, working with your senior enlisted within your team, your senior NCOs, they're going to know your team really well, how they operate, how to best communicate with them, and really tailoring your products that we have, which we have briefing cards, public affairs guidance, communication plans. We can use playbooks that have a collection of different messages and talking points and themes, and taking those and putting them in a package or a way that can be best utilized by your team.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you have your shop has a social media strategy or a campaign they're working on with regular posts, like having applicable messages and talking points for your command. In such a way that it's easy for them to access, and in a way that they can understand to take it, use it on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
And you had a good example you were telling me about of a good practice for aligning your team with this as well.
When Commander Fred Martin was here, he taught me to just break out a whiteboard on wheels, and on one side of it write down what we know, and on the other side of it write down how we feel about it. which is, you know, your talking points and your facts. And on your talking points, don't worry about making them full sentences. Don't worry about even making them full phrases. Just start writing down the raw data about what we know about this topic, because sometimes in a crisis or an issue or a disaster, we just need to know the information as fast as we can. Yeah. And just in whiteboard, start putting that down, because data changes, right? How many people we rescued this week? How many vehicles do we have going out? How many forces are working with it? Because we need to update that stuff every day. And so we just keep a running tally of the facts. Mm-hmm. And then as leadership speaks, as our messages get updated, we keep a running list of those messages. And that allows us to be able to mix and match those as appropriate. And we have that thing to where we can move it around, we can eat it. And basically, we have a, you know, it's almost like an Ouija board where we can just kind of be like, oh, this is the response we need right now. This is it, right? And we can just mix and match to whatever we need for whatever question comes, and it works out great.
Absolutely. So when you're putting together those effective responses, what kind of pitfalls can you encounter that you might need to be aware of?
And there are many. I think the biggest one, and maybe this is an obvious to state it, but just remembering to use those effective responses. Sometimes we get caught up in answering the question, and because we have to think about, you know, do we have the correct answer? Have we validated that it is correct? Do we have the authority to give that response? Is it within is it in our lane, as we like to say?
Right.
So that's a task to begin with. So just remembering, once you have that answer and you're ready to respond and communicate, to include those messages and talking points. So that's the first step.
Yeah.
I think secondly, you know, messages should be memorable. They should be short. We have a tendency to create kind of long, verbose messages sometimes, just because on paper, something can seem like, oh, this includes all the correct information that we need. This has all the pieces, but then when you say it out loud, and then also include a talking point or a fact to then support your message, it can become very long, and you can lose your audience at that point.
Yeah, we actually have a little acronym we like to use when we're talking about messages, right? Mm-hmm. Memorable, short, relevant, and positive. Mm-hmm. MSRP for those of you back home in your home audience. So how can our commanders utilize these tools?
The first step is, when you're drafting these tools, whether it's provided to you and you are tailoring it for your uses, or if you're generating these tools yourself, briefing cards, communication plans, draft them with your end user in mind. So if you are preparing for a media engagement your commander is going to be speaking at, you know, understand your commander. You know, some commanders have more experience engaging with the media, some maybe less, and that's okay. That's why we exist, to train and to advise. So tailor your briefing cards to your commander. So I've had some commanders that like all the information you have, like whether that's, it could be 10 to 12 pages. They want all the data, and they can handle that. They'll go through that. I've had others that they want like the one pager, right, that summarizes the relevant data and what they need to know.
Right.
So tailoring it for them so it can be most effective. And then the second half of that is provide those materials, those tools to your leadership, and then follow through, like schedule a sit down with them so you can go over it, even rehearse. We call it sometimes like murder boarding, practicing, and you can put yourself in the role of the reporter and ask some of the questions. Like ask the questions you expect them to answer. And then it's also equally important to ask some of the questions maybe you hope they don't ask, right? Just to prepare them and train them to effectively respond to those questions.
Also, if at your command or location, if you're not a very deep PA shop, or you're rusty or don't necessarily have the experience there, Pavilion has a lot of these resources right available for you. You can get right on our digital learning environment through Pavilion. Access briefing cards, access information about themes, messages, and talking points to get a refresher, or go out and grab these resources to be able to begin developing this stuff yourself that can give you a jump start right into this information and start making you effective at it. And I think that's really valuable to as a resource that we make that's free, open to everyone, without a CAT card. It's just there. It works.
No, I'm glad you brought up Pavilion because I think it's a great learning tool. And, you know, if I'm a new PAO or I someone wants to become better at what I do, what kind of things can I do? What resources can I lead to or get additional learning or training to help me that much better?
Yeah, there are a lot of resources in addition to Pavilion, right? I'd say one on the human side of things, reach out to mentors in the community or outside the community and ask, get their feedback, get their opinions. Like, they're there to help you, and whether that's your kind of immediate higher headquarters public affairs shop or someone you've worked with in the past within your shop or tangentially, reach back to DINFOS, right? Their instructors here are here to train while you're here, but then the relationship doesn't end there, right? Come back. We have advanced level courses and intermediate courses. I'm stealing your thunder here.
No, Steve. By all means.
So I think you're probably the best person to speak on that. Like, come and take advantage of those resources available.
Yeah, we
have two advanced courses that we offer right now in person, both the Joint Contingency Public Affairs course and the Joint Intermediate Public Affairs course. And what's great about those is that it's not just going back over what was taught in the basic course, but that it has new modules, new curriculum, as well as going above and beyond what was taught in the basic course. So you really come out with a broader skill set, no matter which course that you're able to come through, a two-week course or a five-and-a-half-week course. Yeah. And then hopefully we have potentially some new stuff on the horizon, kind of in the out years that we're in development on. So more to follow on that.
Exciting.
So, yeah.
Scoop. Are there any good examples from industry that you can also tell us about that we might be able to learn from as well?
Yeah, of course. We've talked about how this, like, developing and utilizing effective responses, messages, and talking points, it is a learned skill. Mm-hmm. And the more you do it, the more familiar you are with it. And I think to answer this question, the more I've dabbled in this, right, professionally, the more I can recognize. And, you know, I see a press conference on TV, and mm-hmm. I can recognize the effective responses being used.
Absolutely.
I've seen that in oftentimes in crises when they're media engagements, press conferences, like local police chiefs or U.S. Coast Guard representatives are really particularly great at getting up there and responding and answering questions, but also providing those command messages and talking points. You mentioned industry. We, in the introductory class or the basic qualification course for public affairs, I like to use the example of Nike, right? Mm-hmm. It's a company that by and large everyone is familiar with.
Sure.
But we pull up examples of some of their products that they use to communicate to their publics, to their markets. And they do a great job of, at least definitely on their website, showing what their themes and their, not command messages, but their messages to their publics are. And you can pull it up. One of theirs, for example, is diversity, equity, and inclusion from their website. And you can click on that. It gives their statement and then provides the facts right underneath. So, where their company is and where they're going. That's one example. And the more familiar you are with it, the more you can go to any web page of an industry, go to the About Us section, and see, like, hey, that's a message. Like,
right.
And then the next question to ask is it an effective message? Like, where's their data to back that up?
Right, so. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, I would definitely like to go a little bit deeper into the concept of narrative now and discuss narratology, because that's something that you teach in the advanced studies courses.
Yep.
And something I think, you know, many in our career field aren't as familiar with. So I'll throw it over to you, Mr. Von Jack. Can you tell me, what is narratology?
So very simply put, it's the study of narratives. But narratives are stories that are aggregated together to shape the understanding of relevant actors, who are everyone in the environment, how they understand and conceptualize and contextualize ideas both about themselves and about things, and that these ideas and this understanding of these ideas come together to form both their assumptions and their facts and these grand stories that this is their perceptions of reality. Mm-hmm. And so we study how not just what these stories are, what these aggregated stories are, but how they form these, how they shape these, and how we as a joint force can begin to shape these. So that way commanders can understand how the informational domain impacts the operational domain and how commanders can begin to use this to meet their desired end state.
Okay, great, wow. Talk to me about the joint forces specifically and how they use narrative.
So we use narrative all the way down from the strategic level down. So narrative comes in many different sizes. Each one of us has a narrative that we have about ourselves, right? So we have a story that we tell about ourselves. We have stories that we won't share with anyone else, right? And then we have a story that, like, oh, this is what our family considers of us. And then that aggregates into our own narrative. So there are individual narratives. There are master narratives that we hold collectively, like the idea of, like, the prodigal son or, like, David and Goliath, right? These ideas, now those are biblical, but they also, like persist in society of, like, this grand idea or, like, the American dream here culturally for America. Like, that's a grand narrative that we all share and can familiarize with. The joint force uses a narrative on the structure of a current state, a future state, a pathway, and a justification to say this is where we are, this is where we want to go, this is why we want to get there, and this is how we should all go together. And we build that on story and message to all go together. And we do that from what the president says all the way down to the operational level of, like, what a joint task force says, like, and this is how we're going to go and we could execute the thing. And if a joint force, or if, you know, a military, or if, you know, a fighting force does that well and communicates that well, then the people that they're communicating to get behind that and they say, yeah, we should do that. We should all go together. Like, that's a great idea. But if they don't do a very good job of that, and there's kind of a say-do gap between what they're doing and what they're saying and what everyone understands, then they start to run into issues with turning ideas into reality.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
And so that's why we want to study this. That's why we want to make sure that we can make that a reality, because very often we have a tendency to say one thing and we say, oh yeah, this is what we want to have happen, but we don't spend any time really understanding what the people we're talking to want to have happen.
Right.
Or even, like, how they need to hear it, because we don't understand what their stories are and how they perceive those stories, because we don't understand them.
Right. Okay, great. Well, we have a question from social media. Jack Georges says, or asks, what's the role in integrating messaging in the JTF, or Joint Task Force, or in a Joint Task Force?
So integrating messaging is key for how we have to understand the way that narrative is built into everything that a Joint Task Force does. The public affairs, along with the other information forces, develops the narrative. And this was all came out of JP3 TAC-04 about a year and a half ago now. And when the narrative is developed, it sets the tone of all those stories that the Joint Task Force is going to be telling. Because remember, narrative is an aggregation of many stories together. And the Joint Task Force is going to tell stories of what they're doing operationally. It's going to tell stories on social media. It's going to tell stories about what they're doing to their adversaries and to their friends and to everyone else all across the Joint Operations area. And hundreds of thousands of stories of hundreds of thousands of small interactions. And all those have a message attached to them. And maybe that message is, we're here to help. And maybe that message is, you can't do that anymore here. Or, you know, we're going to get you, right? Like, whatever that message is. And if those messages aren't aligned and aren't planned and don't synchronize to the narrative of what we're saying about ourselves and this grand story that we're telling, you run into alignment issues of that say-do gap. And people begin to then see the seams of what you're saying to who you're saying, and it all begins to fall apart. And so down to the very message level and that very talking point level that Mark was talking about so very well and saying, like, this is how we need to talk about it and this is how it needs to be sewn together, from that level to each person that we're going to be talking about, all the way back up to the joint force level of saying, this is our story, has to be sewn together, and it has to be seamless all the way through on each topic. And it's daunting, and it's a lot of work, but we have to do it to make sure that whenever we go through the trouble to communicate with everyone, that it is in line and in sync on how we're going to be doing it.
Yeah, and one thing on the flip side of that coin, and I don't know if that's maybe not the flip side, but understanding that landscape as you described, but also making sure you know what is the Joint Task Force's mission, right? Because your messages have to support that, right? They need to adapt to the narrative landscape. But at the end of the day, we're looking to support whatever that Joint Task Force mission is. So it's a two-sided coin as I'm thinking of it. But you have to consider all of those factors to be effective.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We got another question from social media. J.A. Marlowe asks, can you give us some tips on writing effective narratives?
So we need to understand the narrative landscape before we can begin to write a narrative. And writing narratives is crucial to our role as public affairs advisors now. But first, we need to take a look at where we're going to be conducting operations, what is going on there, and say, what is the narratives, what are the narratives in that space, right? What does the narrative look like? Which is to say, what all is being said? What are the stories? How do those stories aggregate into collective narratives? What all is being communicated? What is the content and form of those narratives, right? What is being said? How is it being said? What's being transmitted in those? And we just need to understand that first through research and through listening and through going back as far as we can in our data set to really get a good picture of that. And then once we think that we understand the narrative landscape and the ebb and flow of all those stories, and their impact on the people there, we can begin to say, now let's take a look at the audience analysis. Who are the communicators in that space? Who is complementary to us and who is in competition with us as communicators in that space, right? So who's telling stories that go along with what we want to happen and who is telling stories that are in competition to what we want to happen? And then we can kind of go through and start doing our more traditional public affairs audience analysis, but we do that after we really define the narrative landscape. And once we've been able to do that, we now have a much better picture of how people in our area connect. We can have a social network analysis that allows us to see how people in a given area connect not only to each other, but to power structures, what those methods of connection are, and how they light up, how changes are, so that way if we begin to make changes inside that network, we can see that if we remove nodes or strengthen nodes or change nodes within that through our knowledge, attitude, and behavior changes that we make as communicators, or through other information forces in support of us, that towards the commanders in state, that we can really begin to shape this thing. And now that allows us to then say, this is what we can write towards the commander in state to say, this is where we're at, current state. This is where we want to be. Both the people and us as a joint force together, this is where we want to go. This is why we want to go there, right? In our national strategic interests, in the people's interest, in the government's interest, this is all where we want to go. This is how we are going to get there collectively and why we should go there. That's the narrative combined with the messages, combined with our story together. Now you have something that the people can latch onto, the people can understand, that can begin to shape that landscape to where now people who aren't experiencing the good side of that can begin to say, I think I can get on board with this, and I think I want to come with you because it sounds better than what I'm experiencing, and that's worth trying.
Absolutely. Mm. You know, whenever I'm looking for resources or understand a concept, I usually turn to doctrine. And I think doctrine does a great job of defining concepts such as narrative. So can you go into some more detail in terms of how doctrine and what doctrine specifically defines narratives and the different types of narratives that it defines?
Absolutely. So as I mentioned a little bit earlier, JP3-TAC-04, Information and Joint Operations, came out about a year and a half ago, and it was monumental in the way that it kind of restructured our understanding and a lot of our language around describing what's out there. And it provided two different kinds of narratives that we work with, which are competing narratives and complementary narratives. And complementary narratives are those that go along with us, right? So there's a number of examples of complementary narratives. So here in the United States, we have an idea of a society where everyone works hard and they get something for it. And then you have an idea of a military that's here to help people. And there's all these stories that go along with that. And you have an idea that and this narrative that you can make something of yourself, and that those all come together into like this grand master narrative of the American dream. And so those are all complementary narratives because they kind of all go the same direction. But some people experience life through a different frame. And it's not that they're controlling a narrative, because you can't do that, but they experience life and their experiences provide them a different narrative landscape, and where they say that those aren't their experiences, and that capitalism isn't for them, and that these structures have torn them down, and that these aren't their things, and that the American dream doesn't work for them, and that these structures are very hard on them, and that they don't see things that way. And they end up saying that this isn't for them, and that the military is a bad place, and it doesn't take care of people. And we've all seen those sorts of narratives. And in some of my own personal life, I've experienced that, but I also have those other narratives in conflict with me, right? Mm-hmm. And so they begin to go the other direction. And those narratives are in competition with those. They are competing with that. And you can have those, you know, internally to yourself, and then like one wins out over the other. But there are elements within societies or in cultures where they are pervasive, where you have entire groups of people who have decided that they are going the other direction, right? Where you might have criminal elements who decide, I'm not going to go along with the government. I'm going to get rich, you know, by selling drugs. Right? Because that's a lot easier than doing the other thing, right? So we're just going to take a hard left turn into doing my own thing, right? And so they are pursuing a different lifestyle, but that also comes along with a narrative of that they can do this other thing, right? Because their narrative is that the government hasn't been there for them, and so this is the other path.
Sure. Okay. Interesting. So can you tell me a little about how narratives are generally composed and crafted?
Oh, so we compose our narratives after doing our analysis. We sit down with the other information forces and work through on that framework of story and message in the components of current state, future state, pathway, and justification to begin to build that. But ultimately, it's the commander's narrative, whether it's an operational narrative or a strategic narrative or, you know, moving all the way up, is that the commander owns that. But that's the way that we craft them. But really, it's the public affairs owns the narrative as the Office of Primary Responsibility on the staff. Per the joint regulation. And so we have to sit down and understanding messaging, understanding with what we're doing, with everything going on, with public communication and all the different publics that we talk to and those audiences, and saying like what needs to be said and when it needs to be said and how this needs to be staffed, is the onus lies on us to make sure that this product gets out when it needs to get out. And it really starts in the joint planning process, and it starts in step one, and it really runs all the way through about step six of getting that order ready to cut, and then like we are providing that to the boss and getting that thing out. But it's a fantastic when you see it in action. But it's a lot of work.
Indeed, I bet. Talk to me about how narrative affects cognition, and explain to me what cognition is.
Yeah, sure, Mark, you want to take this one?
No, absolutely.
I've got it. Narrative affects cognition because we are story-making machines, right? We're the animals that dream. Well, I mean, my dog dreams, but it can't tell me its dreams, right? I can see evidence of its dreams because its little leg is kicking, but it can't wake up in the morning and tell me what it dreams, right? But I can share my dreams. When we observe the world around us, we take what we see, that little bit of data, and then we build it into information in our heads, and we're like, oh, we're making sense of it, and we're sense-making machines, and then we make that into a story, and then we aggregate those stories into a narrative about the world around us and a narrative about ourselves, and then we get a little bit more, and we build and we build and we build into this idea about who we are and the structure of the world around us. And when we have language to describe the world around us, that opens up our ability to understand it, not the other way around. There have been studies on cultures that didn't have a word for the color blue and they were unable to perceive that color, right? Wow. But once they were given the word in their vocabulary, they were able to perceive the color. But the rods and cones in her eyes were the same as ours, but it was language that provided cognition, not the other way around.
Interesting.
That's how the two are connected.
Okay. So as we've already established, narratives are basically stories, right? There's stories that we want to tell our audiences, tell our publics and stakeholders about who we are and what we do. So can you tell me, what are some of the key elements of a good story?
You're going to have characters. You're going to have conflict. You're going to have a beginning end. You're going to have themes in there. There's going to be stakes, right? Mm-hmm. There's going to be structure. You're going to have things that happen in a certain order. One of the very common structures we've seen is a hero's journey, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, sure.
You know, for those who are out there that like, you know, kind of storytelling and those sorts of things. And what we find is that we as public affairs have a role to look in the information space and go through and aggregate stories through our environmental scanning and begin to collect on those and say, these are now the narratives, because we're aggregating our stories in the information environment, make sense of those for the command. And this is what's happening, right? These are the characters. Right? These are the stakes. This is what's happening. This is the drama. This is what's going on. These are our different players. And from this, we can now begin to say, this is what is likely to happen, because stories have structure, right? And there are only so many stories to tell. And we can often, when we're reading a book, say, oh, this is what's likely to happen next.
Right.
Because we've seen this story before, right?
Yeah.
This is the hero's journey, or this is Star Wars with Star Trek clothes on it. Like, we've all seen this before. This is just Indiana Jones again, and again and again. Like, this is another Marvel movie, right? And so we read this, and then we tell the commander, this is futuring now. This is predictive analysis of what is likely to happen, and when we conduct operations, this is how it's going to shape the narrative landscape, or when we put something into the narrative landscape, this is how it's going to shape someone else's operations. But if we misattribute what's happening in the narrative landscape, if we don't understand what stories are being told, oh, we can get it incredibly wrong. Yeah. Because if we think that we're watching Star Wars and we're really watching Steel Magnolias, a little bit of a throwback there. I don't know if anyone's seen Steel Magnolias, but it's sad.
Anyway. Commonly confused.
Commonly confused.
So how is story typically used in narrative then? If story is so important, how is it typically used in narrative?
So stories are individual components that build into develop the perceptions of narrative, right? So you have a story that you hold and that you encounter and develop. But then you like run into a story and run into another story and run into another story, and they build together. And people are doing this all over the time, continuously, as well as different channels are doing this and different news agencies are doing this. And so story just aggregates together. And stories are foundational in that they allow us to make assumptions and perceptions, and they allow us to have snapshots into this narrative landscape. It's very hard for us to look out and see the narrative landscape as it is, but we can grab onto story as a way to use it as a sense-making tool of where the narrative landscape is at space and time. Because the narrative landscape is so broad and it happens over so many people that it can often be hard to grasp it, right? Because it is the sea. But we can take the temperature of the sea in places and say, like, this is, you know, the salinity of it right here, and this is the temperature of it right here. And that's what a story is we're able to dip into the sea at a place and time and say, this is this little bit of ocean that I'm holding right now. That's the story. And so we're checking on just the little bit of ocean that we can see in that space and time. And if we do that in enough places, right, we begin to get a picture of what's going on in the sea.
You mentioned that term narrative landscape a lot, and I want to kind of delve a little bit more deeper into that.
Sure.
So what is that exactly? Is it just the, like you said, the sea of the stories? Is that kind of what it is?
Yeah, very, very closely put. I think that's kind of a good analogy for it. It's the aggregated landscape. Well, let's not use landscape to define landscape, right? It's the aggregated space of all the stories together. That's the narrative landscape, right? That's where they persist. I sound a little bit like a crazy person, but like when you start to study this thing, at some point you like see it, you're like, right. Oh, you know, like I'm in the Matrix, right? Like you jack in and all of a sudden like you're like, oh, the narrative landscape, it's all around me, right? But like at some point you like break through and you're like, I can understand this now. But like at first it's both away and left of you, and you can't really put your finger on where it's at whenever you're first kind of dealing with it. And then at some point you gain an understanding of how narrative relates to you as a communicator and to the operational force and to the informational domain and to what we do as warfighters. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, this all makes sense. It all connects. It's been right here. And this is how I communicate it to my commanders, right? And I can aggregate it and I can use it to future, and we can make decisions based on it. And it's as real as any other terrain. And all I have to do is just go and look at it and I can get the information I need.
Right.
It's just part of the informational terrain. It's as real as any other forest. It's just where the stories are.
Okay. Well, traveling down the narrative rabbit hole then, let's talk about what makes up a narrative's content and form.
This is a lot of fun because it comes in so many different shapes and sizes. I like to think of like what is said and how it's said, right? So let's say the Lieutenant Commander Langford is trying to join my gang, right? that's right, right? He's an initiate. The way that we communicate, I'm not likely to put something on Facebook that says join my gang, right? That would be some suspect content for me to put on Facebook, right? What is being said, join my gang? I'm not likely to do that because I don't want to get busted. So I'm likely to use face-to-face type of content out there, right? Like, hey, let's have some secret content. And it's like, hey, if you want to join this thing, you got to come by this place. Exactly. Right. That's the sort of, it's handwritten notes, right? It's maybe phone calls on burner phones. That's the sort of things that this is. Now, let's say that he doesn't want to join the gang, but I want him to join the gang, right? I want you to join my gang, Mark.
Sure.
So I say, you're going to join this gang, whether you like it or not. Because you're young, you look like you're fit. I need somebody to move the stuff. So you're going to do this, or bad things are going to happen to your family, right? Now, the form that this is taking is now a threat, right? I am threatening your family. Ooh.
I don't like this narrative.
Yeah, right? Now, this is a very different conversation, right? Which now leads to some feelings he doesn't like it, right?
Right.
So now Mark might be thinking like, oh, maybe it's time to get out of Denfos. Maybe Denfos is getting a little rough for me. Right? Maybe I need to find a different place to work. Maybe this is an unhealthy environment for me and mine, right? So now what his experience is now becoming that, well, I thought that this was a safe place, but maybe my safety is in question. Maybe I'm not as safe here as I thought I was. And now maybe his perception of what his life is like is beginning to take a turn. And now a story has been added to Mark's perception that things aren't so good here. And that if enough stories get added, if enough threats come that way, if maybe, I don't know, something happens to one of his pets, right? That it really takes a turn, right? So, and that's how these things can come together, right? Because content and form can add up and add up. So it's not just always things you see on the media or like, you know, somebody hands you a paper, right? It can be some, you run into somebody on the street. It can be, something whispered to you. It can be a pat on the back. It can be something said to you, because a lot of this stuff happens below the cut line of what we can measure, but what people interact with on a day-to-day basis. Yeah. But we have to be aware of it. We have to understand that it's going on and how it shapes people's perceptions, their knowledge, their attitudes, and most importantly, their behaviors.
For sure.
And I'll offer a competing narrative, if I'm using this correctly, in that Steve is a very friendly person.
Oh, thank you,
bud. And Denfos is a great place to work.
Oh,
and
thank
very
you,
safe.
Bud.
So
thank you, bud.
See how I created that competing narrative.
And you better keep
narrative.
That up if you want to keep safe. Right? No.
I like it.
Big smiles. Narratives. Big smiles.
No. Awesome. Well, we got another question from social media. Josh Fry asks, do you suggest harnessing master narratives? And could you briefly share some examples of a master narrative?
Yes, I highly recommend harnessing master narrative because, so first off, master narratives are different culture to culture. And you have to understand who you're talking to, and you should, during your analysis, both of the narrative landscape and then of your audience, you should understand what master narratives are present in that narrative landscape and held by the people in that area. Because whereas we in Western culture and specifically in America have some very specific master narratives to us, like the American Dream is like just a very quintessential master narrative that we held. Before filming, Mark and I were talking about some master narratives that we collectively both hold that people in Latin America don't hold, right? Because just where they've grown up in the culture that they've grown up in. If we start communicating to them about what we consider to be shared values and the master narratives are different between us, we can have the best intentions of talking about these ideas. And even if we're using the right words, we might not be saying them the right way with the right narrative. And so they won't be received in the right manner. And by understanding the master narrative, it's not manipulative, right? It's not coming at this from a way of like, oh, I need to make you think a certain way. It's that we need to understand the cognitive differences between us, because narrative is the cognitive filter through which communication happens. And first, we make the story, and then we build the narrative, and then we understand. And so before you even reason what's going on, you've developed a narrative. That happens before you even have a cognitive, realistic thought, is you've already developed in your subconscious a founding narrative of what's going on to filter the information that you're seeing. And so by establishing what these master narratives are and how they affect what you're seeing, and how people are engaging with your content and with your messages and with the stories that you're producing, you can begin to shape those stories appropriately for your public, for your audience, so that they will be received in the manner in which you meant to transmit them. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, your credibility can be at stake because you're not communicating the way you intended.
Right, absolutely. Talk to me a little about how narrative analysis affects the information environment and ultimately the assessment that we provide when we advise and counsel our commanders.
Well, it's everything, right? We owe it to our commanders to get this right. And our commanders expect communication and communicators to be able to do more than say that this was yesterday's news and this is kind of what we think about it, right? They are relying on public affairs and on the information forces to give them decision space, not to just admire yesterday, but to accurately provide predictive analysis of tomorrow's information space so that they can make decisions that are going to impact the operational space. And by conducting good analysis of the narrative environment through aggregating the stories into narratives and then by providing that to the commander in a meaningful, understandable way, the command team is able to then make decisions that will save lives, minimize the need for kinetic operations where appropriate, or provide very targeted kinetic operations where appropriate that reach the commander's end state faster and allow us to be as effective as possible and then have cascading effects in both the information and operational domains because there is a synergistic effect between the two because we can say when this happens operationally, this will be the effect informationally, which will then have this effect operationally, and we can just weave the two together, which is exactly what it should be.
Excellent. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of this month's program. Before we say goodbye to both of you gentlemen, is there anything else you'd like to add?
I'd love to add as you mentioned before, this is a topic which a lot of us maybe are very familiar with, at least at the basic level. But even just having this conversation, right, I learned things. There's probably no limit to, like, the depth that you can go to, you know, how far you can go to make sure what we're doing as professional communicators is effective. It's great, you know, any opportunity to come together and have these conversations and talk about, you know, just whether it's the basics or diving deeply into a concept like narratology, I think is a great opportunity. So it's really enjoyed it, and I hope everyone else did as well.
Yeah. Hey, I appreciate the opportunity. I appreciate the team and the chance to work with such consummate professionals such as the two of you. And thank you so much for all you do continuously hosting this thing. You're a testament to your force.
Oh,
thank you.
You're too kind.
And that's a message I can get behind.
That's a message.
Yeah. Closing the loop. Perfect. Yeah, absolutely. Narrative theory is an exciting and interesting field, and it continues to evolve as we continue to change the way we communicate and learn more about how we communicate and how best to communicate. So thank you both for helping us to explore the issue. I found it very fascinating as well. Now, that is our show for this month. I want to thank our guests so much for stopping by and sharing their knowledge and expertise with us. I'd also like to thank you for your taking your time watching our program and especially asking those questions. I really appreciate it. And remember, if you prefer to listen to our show rather than watch it, know that DINFOS Live is also a podcast, and you can find it on your podcatcher of choice. Just search for DINFOS Live. Well, join us next month on February 28th at 2 p.m. Eastern when we'll be talking all about advanced studio photography techniques. For everyone at DINFOS and the Defense Media Activity, I'm Major David J. Murphy, and we'll see you all next month. Bye, everybody.